audience who've been very patient waiting for us. We do appreciate that. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. And we now have a quorum. Thank you, Representative Catula. This is the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. I'm quoring the chairman, and we have Representative Catula, Bud Fate, as opposed to you, Bud Fate.
I'm trying to change my image, Mr. Chairman. We'll call me you or something.
Okay. All right. Well, you call me Victor then. And then, of course, we have Representative Chenault. We have an agenda here, and I do wish to apologize to anybody who's here. We have listened in or testified on House Bill 61. That was requested by the sponsor to not hear that bill today. We need additional time to get information together before that legislation is presented. So testify on that bill. Or if anybody's listening on teleconference, the same sentiments are expressed to you. We've been joined by Representative Roper for the record. And then in regard to the Division of Oil and Gas, there were some logistic problems with the division. They were not able to be here as originally planned for today's meeting for an overview by the division, so we've postponed that indefinitely. Now, House Bill 61 will come up at a later date, and so we'll just simply do that under bills previously scheduled or heard, and we will, for the benefit of folks who are following that legislation, make sure that does get on the schedule so they'll know when that will be back in the committee. So with that, we'll move to the only item on the agenda for today, and that is the royalty gas contract legislation, House Bill 57. We have the sponsor, Representative Chenault, to present that bill, and I don't expect his presentation to be long when you look at his sponsor statement. Take it away, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, House Bill 57 proposes to add manufacturer as the further entity that may claim a benefit of a contract price as a basis for determining royalty due to the state for gas production. I mean, pretty much in a nutshell, that's what it does. I will talk a little bit more on it just so that we won't be shorted or disappointed. The House Bill 57 would amend the state statute 38.05.180AA by allowing the Commissioner of Natural Resources to enter into an agreement to accept a gas price established in a contract between a lessee and or utility as the price for the state's royalty share. This amendment would apply a similar condition to manufacturers of value-added products in the state. What it does, in my opinion, is it allows manufacturers of value-added products in the state to know up front what their costs are. Currently, the way royalty is valued and arranged, up to 5 years later could they actually be hit with a higher cost for royalty gas than what is basically agreed on in a contract. And what manufacturers are looking for are the certainty of price to determine what their costs are. And so basically, in a nutshell, that's kind of what the piece of legislation does. And I would open up the floor back to you for comments, questions that I may be able to answer for you.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. Are there any questions for the sponsor before we get into our public hearing? Representative Catula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe the division or subsequent testifiers will be able to speak to it, but in the fiscal note from the Division of Oil and Gas, it mentions that should only one manufacturer apply under the new section, the state could lose an estimated $36.6 million in royalties over a period of 7 years. And the amendments, they go on to say, are worded more broadly than just one company. So I'm concerned about that, about how they came up with that price and why they think that we could stand to lose that. I'm also concerned about the definition of manufacturer. From what I'm hearing, it's not the intent of the sponsor to include LNG or gas pipeline or anything like that. It's specifically for maybe just one manufacturer to be able to apply.
No, not necessarily for one manufacturer. I think there's probably others that could possibly qualify for it. it is not the intent to apply this to a gas pipeline or to an LNG facility. If they meet the criteria, then that would open the door for the commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, to enter into an agreement. And that's our interpretation of it.
Could I ask a question about that, too? You know, I think it's sounding like, you know, the commissioner has some authority, but the way that this is written, the bill's written, it's actually that they have to. The commissioner shall do that. So is there a possibility then that under this, if they met the criteria of value added, that the gas line or LNG would fit under this and we would give up more royalties? And that's the intent?
No, the intent is not to,
extend
that to a gas pipeline or another LNG facility unless it meets the criteria that is stated in the piece of legislation. It is, you know, our intent to provide manufacturers with the certainty of being allowed to know what their costs are up front for royalty gas over time to allow them to make business decisions that affect their business and keep Alaskans working. And those are the issues that we are interested in, is keeping Alaskans working, number one. Number two, to promote in-state value-added products for our gas, and which will better promote Alaska's resources, and we'll get at the state level, we'll see more bang for our royalties than what we currently receive. You asked earlier, I'll go back to the fiscal note. This was just given to me this morning.
Right.
Where or how they determine the $36.6 million, that's the department's guru that does that. I haven't been explained to you yet why. I don't see where this dollar amount comes from. What numbers are they using? There's no numbers set right now to determine that, you know, the royalty share is $1.50 or $2 or $1.20. So I'm not sure where they came up with their numbers, other than if they're looking at possibly the numbers that utilities currently pay versus what the industry pays on the average, and trying to come up with a formulation there. I don't believe that this bill says that a manufacturer will get the same price as a utility. What it says is once the producer and the manufacturer agree to a price, then the commissioner would approve that price relating to royalty.
And it's his discretion also, I might add, to disapprove it, too.
Correct.
That's my understanding, that the commissioner is not required by this legislation to approve an agreement between the producers and the manufacturers. It would be at his discretion. So if there was some information that suggested it was going to be a major financial loss to the state and it wasn't in our best interest, he could certainly say no to that. Did you have any more questions before we go to the public hearing?
I guess just, are we going to hear from the division about their fiscal note?
I don't know, Beth, and I'll ask if there's anybody here from the division. I was just presented the fiscal note a short while ago as well,
right,
myself, and I would have expected somebody here from the division to defend their analysis here, because we've noticed this bill days ago. Excuse me, Representative Crawford. Is there anybody from the division here that wishes to testify, either online or here in person? I don't see anybody. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reading this bill, it doesn't seem to rule out LNG or NGLs. I mean, it doesn't specifically specifically. It seems to me that a smart lawyer possibly could argue that once they turned gas into NGLs, that it's a value-added product. Do you think maybe to remove that ambiguity that we might establish an intent here? Because I agree with the this bill. I mean, this is something that needs to be done. I'm wholeheartedly in agreement with it, but I just would like to make sure it's, I mean, it does what we intend it to do.
And I guess my answer would be that would we rather them value add LNG in the state of Alaska, if that be the case, or ship raw product elsewhere to be value added?
Well, they're not going to ship LNG. With, I mean, it has to be done before it gets put in a tanker. You know, you can't just
No. What I'm saying is that would you rather see LNG manufactured in the state, or would you rather see raw gas shipped outside via pipeline to be processed elsewhere for value added? And if you were, what would that, what number would that incorporate to want to see value added in the state?
Representative Petula.
Through the chair, I think it's all going to boil down to how much it costs. And until we, you know, get some good figures on that, it's really hard to, anyway, I think what's happened is we've got a good idea. We've got late information from the division on a price that's really concerning me. And then we've got this other issue that I have no idea what that means to the state or its royalties. But maybe we could go ahead and at least hear Ms. Parker and, you know, hear that side. But I really would, maybe not the time for it. I'll wait until you've heard the public testimony today to make my request.
Representative Cotrulla, any more questions? Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I share Representative Cotrulla's concern, and I think I'm sure the sponsor is probably suffering some type of a mental illness malady for getting this fiscal note in the late hour.
So we don't have TV camera for it today. No, that'd be embarrassing.
Anyway, but you say you don't have anybody from the Division of Oil and Gas online or anything?
No, sir, I don't. I would expect them to be here. This was a last-minute, well, it was this morning when they produced the fiscal note late this morning, about 4 hours ago. And I would have expected them to be here, and I heard there was going to be somebody from the administration, but they're not here, obviously. So
I agree with Representative Cotrulla. We need to hear all the testimony here, and frankly, I need to. I'm not sure I quite understand what this bill is doing yet. So I guess if I need some education.
You bet. We'll provide that for you, sir. We have a representative from Agrium who wishes to testify online. And so what I'll do at this point, if it's acceptable to the committee, is to open up a public hearing. We'll move to the testimony. Now, speaking of Agrium, we have a gentleman named Mike Nugent, who I believe is from the Kenai area. It doesn't say on my sheet here, just says off net. Mr. Nugent, are you online?
I am.
Would you please address the committee on this legislation, sir?
Yes, my name is Mike Nugent, and I'm the general manager of the Kenai facilities. And what we do at Kenai is we take natural gas and upgrade that natural resource along with water and nitrogen from the air to make ammonia and urea, which are what we refer to as nitrogen products, and then sell those in the Pacific Rim. And what this bill addresses is, as we look forward into the future and develop natural gas supplies from a variety of producers in Cook Inlet, it will be very valuable for us to know what that future price is. And you know, these would be arrangements that we would establish at an arm's length with another producer, and having knowledge of what the state's share is also valued at, would be very valuable in making decisions. Our margins are fairly thin, just like any other manufacturer, and that uncertainty of what that price would be in the future could be very important in deciding whether that's a price that's going to be profitable for us or not.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are you available for questions, sir?
Yes.
Any questions from the committee for Mr. Nugent? Representative Roper.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nugent, I'm not sure I have a real good grasp of what's going on here and what your intention is. Could you kind of tell the committee some background on Agrium and its and the preceding owner's history of the purchase of your raw material product, the natural gas, and what expectations you may have had and what your needs are to be able to continue to operate and to grow your business in the state of Alaska in terms of access to your raw materials?
Sure. Historically, if we back up to 1968 is when the facility was originally built, and then it went through a major expansion in 1977. The facility during those years was owned by Unical, who also was the supplier and producer of natural gas that fed that facility. So since the producer and the owner of our plant were one and the same, there was a state royalty gas value formula that valued the state's portion of the natural gas supply to the plant. And it was hooked to the value of our end products. In the fall of the year 2000, the plant, the upgrade facility, was sold to Agria, who is the present owner. So there was the producer and supplier of the gas and the operator of the plant, and were two separate businesses, two separate owners. At the time of the sale, Unical was our sole gas supplier, and we were Unical's sole large industrial user of that gas. We are finding here now, a couple years later, that Unical is unable to deliver the full requirements of gas so that we're able to operate our facility at capacity. So we're starting to develop relationships with other producers and other suppliers so that we can meet the gas supply needs of our facility here today in the short term and long term. Into the future, it's our intention to operate this plant for a long period of time. And as we go through those discussions with Unical and with other suppliers of natural gas, we realize it's pretty important to understand what the future costs of those gas supplies would be. And the state is 12.5% owner of most of that gas. Not being able to predict accurately what that gas price is or would be adds risk to any arrangements we might make with the producer or that the producer might make with us. And like Representative Chenault said, the risk here involves we're open to audit for long periods of time to where we could have to pay more for the gas than we originally intended. There is recently a contract developed between NSTAR and Unical to supply gas to NSTAR starting in 2004. And this is an example of what some of that future risk might be. That gas contract values gas at the NYMEX value. And NYMEX value of gas today is about $5.50. But we could not afford to purchase gas for $5.50 and make a profit. So that's an example of what some of the potential risk might be to a facility like ours.
Yes, sir.
Let's follow up there. Mr. Nugent. What, you use the term NYMEX value? I'm not sure I'm familiar with what NYMEX value is.
I'm sorry. NYMEX is the term for what natural gas trades on the open market in the lower 48 states.
Like a Henry Hub gas or a commodity contract gas level or what?
Yeah, and that's basic. That NYMEX is the term for gas that trades on the New York commodities market.
Oh, that NYMEX, okay. Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes.
You indicated an example here of something that could be programmatic. A contract that was recently entered into between NSTAR and Unocal at a price that would be, apparently, would it be adjusted for NYMEX value periodically?
Yes, basically that contract has a floor of $2.75, or that is the floor. It would be valued at what the NYMEX value of gas is. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure if that's adjusted on a monthly basis or annual basis.
Typically, there's some kind of periodic adjustment for the NYMEX or fair market value. Is that right?
Yeah, and I guess that relationships like that would be very risky or make us nervous. You know, for one, Cook Inlet gas is not hooked to any system in the lower 48, so how it could be valued at a value in the lower 48 doesn't have a lot of logic behind it anyway. If Cook Inlet gas was hooked by pipeline to the lower 48, it would not trade at the NYMEX value. It would trade at NYMEX value discounted for the pipeline system cost to get it to the lower 48. So arrangements like that could have, because the state is a 12.5% owner in that gas, could arrangements by people other than us could have a detrimental impact on our business. I think what we're interested in is paying a fair value for the gas and having that price be predictable.
Any more questions for Mr. Nugent? We can get back to him if you'd like, Mr. Roberg, or Representative Roberg, if you have additional thoughts to come to mind or questions. Unless you're ready now.
Other folks to testify?
Yes, sir. We do have one other individual online.
Another.
Shall we go to that person and then go back to Mr. Nugent? Or?
Go ahead. If he could stay available.
Okay. Mr. Nugent, if you'd be so kind to stay in line, because we might have some additional questions for you.
Yes, I will.
Very much. Okay, we'll move to a gentleman by the name of Tad Owens at the Anchorage LIO. Tad, are you available?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Go ahead.
My name, for the record, is Tad Owens. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. RDC is a private nonprofit trade association representing individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fisheries industries. And our mission is to help grow Alaska's economy through the responsible development of the state's natural resources. We're supportive of House Bill 57, and we appreciate the House Oil and Gas Committee's consideration of the bill. In 2001, the 22nd Alaska Legislature adopted a declaration of state economic development policy. And part of that declaration asserts that it is the policy of the state to encourage value-added processing in Alaska. And we believe that House Bill 57 advances this policy. By establishing the contract price as the basis for determining the state's royalty share on natural gas, this legislation provides both producers and manufacturers of value-added products with greater certainty regarding their costs. Reducing the risk associated with the state's royalty share indirectly reduces the overall risk of gas exploration in Alaska. Cost certainty and risk reduction are two important factors in encouraging private sector economic development in the state. And it's important to note, I think, that we believe the proposed legislation provides the state, through the Commissioner of DNR, with the authority needed to reject any request that would be detrimental to the state of Alaska's interests. In other words, House Bill 57, in our opinion, finds an appropriate balance between providing incentives for manufacturers of value-added products and protecting the interests of the state. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Owens. Any questions for Tad Owens? Tad, I have one. This is a coring the chair. I wanted to get your thoughts as far as what you foresee legislation of the this legislation were passed as far as its effect on the economy in the future. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but do you expect there to be growth in the industry when it as it relates to value-added industries like Agrium?
Well, the folks from Agrium might be more appropriate to ask that question, but I think from our standpoint, it does provide, potentially provide, certainty with regard to the royalty that the state is going to take on natural gas. And in the case of Agrium, that is going to hopefully help them a little bit on their margins and hopefully keeps that plant down on the Kenai operating for a long time to come.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Is there anybody else on the line via teleconference that I did not announce that might have come online that wishes to testify at any location? Anybody at all? Hearing none, is there anybody here in person that wishes to testify in front of the committee on this legislation? Seeing nobody, Representative Roper, did you have additional questions for Mr. Nugent?
Well, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just trying to understand the issue here. Mr. Nugent, would you... Are we assuming here that the amount of royalty and kind gas the state has a claim to would be the only gas of which this legislation is subject to?
Yes, it would only be subject to the portion of the gas that the state owns.
And do you know what the current amount of availability on that royalty and kind gas is in the Cook Inlet area? Is it all going into other utility purchases, or is there, or to your firm, or what is the allocation now?
I think the allocation now is that any gas sold to whether it's utility or ourselves, the state owns 12.5% of that, of course, and then they they receive the revenues off from that stream.
I understand
that. So I guess another way to answer your question, the state's gas is not specifically targeted to us or to a utility or anyone special.
Well, I assume that, I guess I'm not understanding this. I assume that this bill related to royalty and kind gas, or is it just a benchmark price at which anybody else establishes a benchmark price? So you go to a producer and bargain a deal. They can't bargain a deal with you that's like fair market value. They're stuck with whatever the statute, and you're able to bargain as to a price, but then they can't do a periodic, you can't have reopeners in it or something. I guess I'm confused.
I guess, I didn't understand your question at first. I think the key word is that this is not gas that the state of Alaska is taking in kind. This is gas that the producer markets for the state.
So I guess, my concern is here, this fiscal note from the Division of Oil and Gas that claims some kind of loss of state revenue, and I'm just trying to figure this out. It seems to me they may be off mark here, but I got to understand this.
And I guess I don't have any knowledge what's behind that number either, because it would basically require predicting a future value for the gas.
Well, presumably, if you're paying less value even for any other produced gas because you can't have a reopen on her, that would, because the state is receiving a royalty benefit from that gas and there's no future price adjustment, there is a loss of phantom income or anticipated income in the future. That may be the grounds for their estimates. But I'm really kind of disturbed by it.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to see the detail, too.
I think so. There's a $36 million fiscal note sitting on our desk. It's enough to... That scares the daylights out of me.
Me too. Well, first, I want to... May I?
Yes, please.
Thank Mr. Nugent and the people from Agrium that have visited me, and I think that we're all struggling with the $36 million fiscal note because I'm with Representative Roekberg. It scares me too. And there's just a couple of fundamentals I need to understand that I don't right now, one of which is exactly how we're figuring out our royalty on this gas. And I understand severance tax a whole lot better than I ever did royalty, so I don't know that. Second, what Agrium or like businesses are paying in royalties right now, and then what the reasonable likelihood of what they would be paying in the future under our current law versus what this new law would do. And I think that that's something we've got to know before we can make a good decision, because otherwise we've got possibly an unintended consequence of $36 million to us, and none of us wants that. So I just, if anyone can answer those questions or if we could get answers, it would be very, very helpful.
We don't have any calculations that I can see from the Department of Natural Resources. My initial reaction when I saw that $36 million is, huh, that sounds like a big number, and it just
right.
seems like it's an inflated number, perhaps designed to derail a bill that somebody might have a philosophical opposition to. I don't know. I'm not questioning anybody's judgment. If I sounded that way, I do apologize. But it does seem like a pie-in-the-sky number, and there's legitimacy to it. I'd like to know what that is, but my initial reaction is it's excessive. Representative Curtula.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Nugent can tell us what he's been... There was another part of the fiscal note, and maybe he can tell us, or Ms. Parker, who I don't want to put on the spot, but who's here in Juneau, could tell us whether what the division has told us we would have lost in more current years, 2000 and 2002, the second page of the fiscal note says the cumulative impact would have been approximately $8.2 million in nominal dollars. Does that sound right to you, Mr. Nugent? If you had negotiated a price, I mean, that's kind of difficult to tell, but what are you paying in your royalty right now? Maybe that's where we start. Do you know what your royalty is at this point to the state?
What we're going to pay the royalty right now is a subject of discussion between Unocal, our producer, and the Department of Natural Resources, as we're operating under existing law. What I can tell you that is during 2001 and 2001, our total gas bill to the facility was $80 million. In 2002, it was about approximately $70 million. So, and the state's only at 12.5% owner. So, I'm having real difficulty understanding where $36 million would come from.
13.34.
Well, is that 12.5% of your $80 million? Then, am I understanding you right that we'd be getting in royalties?
That's if.
So, $8 million over the last 2 years in royalties to the state?
Yeah, we paid our producer in 2001 $80 million for the gas.
12 in 1 year.
Yeah, and that was in 1 year. Last year it was closer to $70 million because we didn't consume quite as much gas. So, like I said, what the royalty payment is a subject to discussion for those 2 years right now between Unocal and the state. But if it was 12.5% of what we paid our producer, then it doesn't even come close to this to $36 million.
Yeah, I know you don't have this in front of you. If I might, with the chair, it was over a period of years. You're absolutely correct. It couldn't be. It was over a period of, I believe, 5 years that they had averaged it. So that might seven. That might be about right. If it's 12.5% of the amount that you just stated, is.
I I guess another way to look at it, if I might, when we were part of Unocal, what we paid Unocal in 2001 and 2002 basically followed the state royalty formula that was in existence when Unocal owned the property. So, had that remained one entity, the royalty payment would have been a clear 12.5% of that amount.
Mr. Nugent, you know, I think we're all kind of a little bit in shock about seeing this note, and you don't even have it in front of you, so it's really not good. Apparently, my review of the Table 1 of the attached fiscal note, attachment on it, indicates that were this bill in effect in the years 2000, 2001, and 2002, which were calendar years, that the cumulative, or the total amount of that difference would have been $8.2 million for the past year against the contract value in 2000 of $1.20, royalty value of $1.70, and a 50 cent difference, CFM, and then like $1.7 million in the year 2000. And that, then they add it up. It varies from in 2001, a contract value of $1.38 and a royalty value of $2.20. Do those numbers mean anything to you in terms of what's the contract value and the royalty value?
Well, the $1.38 is within a couple cents. That number is recognizable to me because that's about what we paid per 1,000 cubic foot both in 2001 and 2002. And like I say, that's based on the same formula that would have set the state royalties value had we still been part of Unocal, because it was based on the value of our products, of our end product.
There's got a quote royalty value against $1.38 of $2.20, and with an 81 cent difference delta, with a $2.9 million royalty foregone.
I guess the 220 might be. Lisa, help me here a little bit. Is that the current posted value of Cook Inlet gas for utilities?
In 2001, presumably. Because it looks like in a footnote here, it says that the forecast is $2.50 per CFM today with $3.12 for FY09. That's a DOR present value calculation, I guess.
I might interrupt here just to say that Lisa Parker has stepped forward. She's was kind of laying low there, but I think she's finding the pressure mounting here to help work us through this as far as our questions. So, Lisa, thank you very much for joining us, and if you have any input you care to share with us at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Roper, with respect to the fiscal note from the department, the royalty value and the numbers that they have there, I'm not sure where they got those numbers from. And that would be a question to ask the department. I don't know where they came from and where they calculated that, because the state of Alaska, under paragraph 36, they have to take a higher of, and they're supposed to get the highest value that they can for the state's royalty share. And based on numbers that we've seen in the that the department publishes, the royalty values and the higher of, this is not them. So you'd have to ask the department how it was that they calculated this.
Well, I sure would.
We'll have the department here. Excuse me for interrupting.
If I might add, Mr. Chairman, one of the disadvantages that Mr. Nugent alluded to is that we are a consumer of the product, and we are not engaged in the negotiations as to what the producer pays to the state of Alaska for the state's royalty share of the gas. We are the person that pays the bill in the end, but what the state and the producer agree to as to what should be the price for the state's royalty value, we're not privy to those negotiations. We are only privy to the negotiations between us and the producer as to what it is that we can negotiate with them to buy gas from them.
Yes, Chairman.
Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think, Ms. Parker, that's what you're endeavoring to, this bill's endeavoring to do, is to take the uncertainty out, because there could be negotiations between the producer and the state as to the value at a particular point in time of what that gas would be. But you're suggesting that there should be a stable price, notwithstanding when you would enter an agreement with the producer, you want a stable price for a longer period of time. But typically, there are reopeners or adjustments for market value considerations in negotiations between the producer and the state. Is that, am I on the right track here? Or am I?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Roberg, yes, you're on the right track. And that's in the,
so that's the policy.
But that's between the producer and the
right.
state of Alaska. And we just want a mechanism where the producer can request of the state that they establish as their royalty price the price that they've negotiated with us as a consumer.
Mr. Chairman, I can direct to a question to Mr. Nugent this time. I'm very disturbed about what he said regarding this contract that Unical entered with MSTAR, that if you take the NYMEX price of $5.50, and I noticed the NYMEX price for future contracts was in the $5.70 range on the CNBC this morning. That's an extremely high price, and it may be seasonal and war-related, various other things, BTU values, etc. right now. But, is there certain pricing in which, you're going to be run out of business, or your operations are going to be in jeopardy if prices reach a point that you can't produce profitably? Is there, I'm sure there is, but I mean, I guess I'm disturbed by what you said, that the $5.50 value you couldn't operate under. I mean, I don't mean to be prying too far in your business, but you're asking us to make a policy call here. And I'm concerned. I think that the public should be aware that there are realistic limits about what you can do to operate profitably.
Yeah, I can say generally, and the reason I say generally is because it depends on value of our product at the time. And here over the last several years, because of the economic conditions in the world, drought in the agricultural areas of North America, those sort of things, our products were priced fairly low. To be able to survive during those low product price cycles what I can generally say is our economic model says we shouldn't pay any more than $2 for gas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and you contend because of the the export value of Alaska gas may be overstated if we use stateside, if you will, South 48 methods of measurement of valuation, because they haven't been discounted for the cost of transportation and conditioning to be able to be transported. Is that correct?
Yes, I guess I was trying to use that as an example of one of the extreme cases that could take place that we have no control over, and that was an arrangement agreed to between MSTAR and Unical.
Right. I will.
And it doesn't have a lot of logic on NYMEX value of gas, because even if our cook inlet system was hooked into the lower 48, it would be discounted backwards up the system to Cook Inlet, and it would never have a value that equaled NYMEX value. So the arrangement I referred to doesn't have clear logic to it, and I think that's a good example of some of the uncertainty that we don't want to expose ourselves to.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow on.
Yes. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Nugent, if these local Alaskan companies are making these apparently arm's-length transaction and agreements to reflect a higher value, isn't that somewhat driven by the fact that there's a perceived shortage of natural gas in the Cook Inlet Basin currently? And when I think there's a general recognition that there's more supply there, although it's arguable or debatable, that we need more production in Cook Inlet to help moderate the prices here? Or are they using these lower 48 in worldwide standards to kind of drive their negotiations?
I think that there's a yes answer to both of your questions. The supply in Cook Inlet has diminished over the years to where it now matches the demand, and it's time for producers to go bring new supplies to market. Again, in the example I used, doesn't set a value for that contract between you and the Cal Ninstar really is for a small percentage of the production from Cook Inlet, but because of the current royalty arrangement, it can start to ratchet up the value of gas in the entire region.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nugent, does your firm ever conduct any of its own exploration production anywhere in the world, or you just strictly go on the market for buying your raw material?
At the present time, we just go to the market to buy our raw materials, but especially here in Cook Inlet, this has become a critical issue for us, and we are currently exploring all possibilities to bring us some long-term, reliable natural gas supplies. So at the present time, we are not a producer, but we are don't intend to leave any stone unturned in our search for natural gas.
I might add, sir, that you might find a source of natural gas in the near future if we pass House Bill 69. That's a bill we're going to have in a couple of days that we're hoping will spur more development in the shallow gas fields, of which we've got phenomenal potential in the Kenai Peninsula. I know that's a side issue, but there's that great potential for the future, and we've got a representative from Evergreen here who's going to be most interested in that bill as well as other companies. But anyway, just a little side note. Representative Curtula.
Well, thanks, and I know, again, you don't have the fiscal note in front of you, but it looks like, again, under the footnotes on the table on page 2, it's number 5, it looks like the division indexed the royalty value to the Department of Revenue's prevailing value for Cook Inlet, and that the forecast is that it's just going to go up in cost. So... what our current royalty is based on is on value and the value to the state. That's my basic understanding. And your concern is, if I'm understanding it right, Mr. Nugent, is you don't want the cost to go so high that you're forced out of business. Would that be the bottom line?
Yes, and I think that's very important to the state, too, because we had a lot of... we had a lot of value to the natural resource before it leaves the state of Alaska, and that has a lot of value to the state. If gas becomes unaffordable to us, and we're not in business anymore, to take it to an extreme, that's going to be a big revenue hit for the state too.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Yeah, this is one news. If gas goes skyrocketing, how do we correctly, you know, base our state return? It's a tough question to me. So I appreciate your bearing with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Stugia, I guess, are you going to be able to find producers if they basically put a cap on the price? You don't really want to cap the price per se. You just want to have some price stability. That's basically it, number one. But number two, are you going to be able to find producers to try to be able to buy enough product at around the $2 MCF to be able to make a go of it, though?
We think so. There are producers that supply that gas to us for less than that right now, and we're very encouraged with the discussions we've had with a number of potential producers in Cook Inlet that they could supply gas to us for that price. There's another value that we bring to natural gas producers in Cook Inlet. The utility market in Cook Inlet is very seasonal, so there's a high demand in the winter and almost no demand in the summer. And we're an industrial user that brings steady state consumption to a gas producer year-round. So that brings that steady state demand is valuable to a producer also.
Further questions? Seeing those further questions, I'd like to go ahead and close the public hearing. Now, just for the assurance of members here who are concerned about the fiscal note, I will hold it over because we should hear from the department. We have a serious issue here with that fiscal note, and I would like to hear them justify such a high number. I've got doubts that it would be that high, but we'll certainly hear them out.
Yes, sir, Mr. Representative Roquart. Unless you intended to try to move the bill today, you don't want to close the public hearing if you want to hear from the division.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing back up, and then we'll just, when we're ready to move on, we'll just simply adjourn the meeting. We'll just hold the meeting over.
Mr. Chairman, yes, do you have any more witnesses?
No, I don't.
I have a question of the sponsor, then, a couple of questions.
Okay. All right.
To the chair, to Representative Chenault, did you, both Representative Catula and I do have a concern about the definition of manufacturer. Did you review that and see what the implications are here into other areas that might find themselves becoming eligible for this that might have some really negative impacts that we don't anticipate? Matter of fact, just today, two bills have happened. Two things happened today, Mr. Chairman. Representative Chenault, that about bills that that I was instrumental in having something to do with passing, that I was informed of an unintended consequence. So it kind of ruined my day. Nothing that we can't fix, but and not earth-shaking, but enough to make me intellectually upset with myself, if you will. And so those are always the things you want to guard against. So, but going back to the question of the sponsor is that this definition of manufacturing, I get, I'm really kind of nervous that it appears to me too broad. And also, did you consider, it's one method I've used in the past, is to put some geographic sideboards around the particular area that might help do that and accomplish your goal without opening Pandora's box to the, like all the ANF stuff, you know. I mean, did you get any consideration there?
We will consider it, Representative Roquart, and I will look into it as far as the manufacturing questions.
Yeah. That really does trouble me. I think Representative Cartula brought that up because it seems to me, I mean, one thing we want to do, particularly with ANF gas, if it goes down through a non-LNG pipeline over the highway, is that the issue about the petrochemical,
potentiality of in-state added value manufacturing, I think is a significant factor. It's something that really will create, have an impact even on the whole financing of the gas pipeline. So we don't want to do something today that would inadvertently even have a hint of impacting that. But on the other hand, we want to be able to accommodate a fine member of the Alaskan business community and a job provider of high-paying, non-Walmart jobs.
That was the point I was going to make, and we have Representative Fage who's going to address the committee in a moment here, but I wanted to note that there is incredible economic benefits, particularly to Kenai with this plant. We really appreciate their investment in the community down there, and there is a handout inside your packet that does point out several facts in here that are just quite substantial. There are 700 jobs, $90 million in expenditures in the Kenai that involve 118 different companies. They produce a value added with the products there of $190 million annually. They're the third largest private employer in the Kenai Peninsula. So really the goal of this legislation is to help this company and to help future companies of this nature to feel like they can profitably operate in the state, and hopefully that result will be a great stimulus to our economy. And so I guess we as a committee need to decide where do we draw that line as far as what we're giving up in terms of future revenues into the state versus what we're gaining from the economic benefits we'll potentially enjoy. So we'll see what that fiscal note explanation is from the state, and then we can just make a decision as a committee as to whether we're gaining enough to offset what we're losing. Representative Fate.
Well, it's going to be hard to articulate this the way I want to ask this question, but I'm going to try here. Are you free to tell us what your return on investment need is relative to the percent of netback that you netback being to the present facility, what percent of that you would pay to stabilize that gas price to you? Because I understand what they've done here in calculating this and why they've come up with a loss. I don't understand what figures they've used, but I understand the process and I understand how they did that. And it has to do with how you price gas, which is at the netback. So have you figured out what percentage of the present netback they're enjoying as a profit to the present facility? Are you prepared to equate a certain percentage to stabilize that, which will probably, and it has to do with your internal return on investment? So are you allowed to compute to what your new return on investment would have to be if you stabilized that at a lower price and therefore a lower net back to the producers who eventually make the money?
I'm not sure if I really completely understand your question.
Well, that's what I was afraid of there. But in simple terms, at the present time, let's say that they're selling to what is it? Your Agrium. Excuse me. 100 MCF at $5.50. Their wellhead price is, we'll say, $3.50. Their net back is $2. Okay, now you come along and you want to stabilize that price, and that's to the producer. Now you want to come along and tap out of that 20 MCF. That leaves the state, or that leaves the producer 80 MCF because you're taking that out at a less price than the $5.50 because you want to stabilize it over long term. So you take it out at $4.50. And therefore, the net back to the producer is about $360, whereas before it was $550, and that's where and I'm just using these figures as an example, and that's where, as a matter of fact, the state realizes its loss. The only way the state wouldn't realize its loss is if you wanted to stabilize the price at the same market value that they're enjoying, which would be $5.50, which would then be the same netback if that's what you want to do. But even then, if the price of gas went up, like we think it may, then you would have that scenario back again, which then the state would take a loss if the price of gas went up. So it's really based on number one, the price of gas at the market and the netback, and how much gas is taken, royalty gas is taken out, because it's taken out in kind, which is another argumentative issue in the gas industry.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Roper. I just didn't get an answer, but I was getting that as a scenario, and I don't know whether he's prepared to give that answer.
Excuse me, Representative Roper. Mr. Nugent, did you get better clarification on that to where you can answer that?
I think somewhat. I think what's important to understand, the situation we might be in, we'll just say we were paying $1.50 for state royalty gas now for discussion purposes. So the state isn't losing any money in that situation. Then someone comes along and pays a much higher price, say the $5.50. What the current law would do then would ratchet up all the state royalty gas we presently purchase to that new value. And in that particular case, we couldn't be able to afford that gas, so we wouldn't buy any of it. So I guess I'd have trouble understanding what the state would have really... See what I'm saying? We weren't paying the difference in the first place between the $5.50 and the $1.50. So I think in that extreme example, then what the state would use if we couldn't buy it anymore, they'd lose the $1.50 we were paying in the first place, and they wouldn't make any sale then to our facility at $5.50.
Representative.
No, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nugent.
Thank you very much. Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate Representative Fate's line of thinking there. But I think when you look at this whole situation, the point that Mr. Nugent makes is an important one. There's a point at which their operations will be unprofitable, and therefore they do the old substitution. They'll stop buying. In other certain economic models, they try to substitute the product, but in this case, they don't have anything they can substitute for it, so they're going to have to shut down operations. But also, when you look at the economic impacts, it's also important you look at a total macro matrix of taxation and benefit, too. There's no question but what the agrium is a particular example here, pays... local borough and taxes. They also pay, I'm sure, hopefully, state corporate income tax. I mean, so in terms of total benefit and so forth, you can try to make any kind of an economic analysis here. You need to take into account not only potential foregone royalty payments to the state, but also the potential loss of other revenue sources in a more broad manner. So I think what you need, you can't look discreetly at like this position of oil and gas and fiscal note alone to make some kind of an economic analysis. Because the impact of the community, the employment levels,
mean, you could even go so far as to say federal withholding income taxes, for gosh sakes, as far as a public benefit. It depends on what you want to do. It's a matter of policy. But I just think we have to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Representative Roberg, and that was actually a more detailed analysis of my point I was trying to make earlier, too, that we have to weigh the economic benefits with me having gone down that road. I might just add one more comment here, if I may, at the discretion of the committee here, and that's clarifying the issue of loss. I admit, used the word loss as far as the state losing, and we have to weigh what we're losing compared to what we're gaining economically, but I don't necessarily see it as a loss because the state is still going to be generating revenue from the sale of that gas. It's just going to be less revenue. It's not going to be an actual loss per se. So I wanted to just clarify what I meant when I made reference to loss. I do support this legislation here. I just see the state taking in less revenue, but we're gaining substantially economic benefit-wise, and local governments will be gaining as far as improving their tax bases and so on and so forth. So are there any more questions or comments from the committee before we adjourn this meeting? What I'd like to do then is to
move it out.
Well, I've already made a decision, Representative Fate, and also have the suggestion of the bill sponsor to hold it over. I know that complicates our schedule somewhat because we have two other bills we were going to hear on Thursday, but we'll try to expedite our legislation as much as we can on this committee. But I think, I'm frankly disappointed that the department dropped this on us, but that what's done is done, and we've chastised them enough, I guess, but we should hear them out on this legislation and get the committee's comfort level up satisfactorily, and then we can move the bill out of committee at that point. So with that, I'd like to hold the bill over to Thursday, February 6th, following House Bill 69, which is the shallow gas legislation, as well as House Bill 16, Representative Fate's stranded gas development legislation. So thank you very much for everybody and for your attendance, and we look forward to seeing you right here on Thursday at 3:15 p.m. So with that, meeting is adjourned.